Episode 166.
And if they don't feel comfortable with the title genius, you know, I'd say get over it, because you are, from the customer's point of view, you're the car genius. You're the one who knows automobiles, mechanics, you know, functions, things like that, systems. And they're not in most cases. So just get comfortable with the fact that you are an automotive expert in your niche. And when you come, when they come in the door to you, you know more on your subject than they do.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to On Point from Remarkable Results Radio, and a special interview from an auto care industry professional. On Point. Hello, aftermarketers throughout North America and around the world. Carm Capriato here, and thank you for hitting the play button. You're in for a treat here in episode 166 with renowned author, speaker, and trainer Jim Cathcart. The episode is sponsored by Federal Mogul Motor Parts. Search for parts and get the latest technical updates. Also, sign up for their new Garage Rewards Loyalty Program at their all-new website, fmmotorparts.com. If you're enjoying the podcast on your favorite subscription service, I thank you. Apple iTunes, Google Play Music, Spreaker, and Stitcher Radio are the home of my podcast for your mobile device listening enjoyment. And you can also listen on desktop and download for later listening at RemarkableResults.biz. Now, today's episode show notes on Jim Cathcart can be found at RemarkableResults.biz/E166. Now, prepare for some enlightenment. Jim Cathcart is an international best-selling author, world-renowned speaker, and president of the Cathcart Institute. He has a connection to the aftermarket as a contributor to Gears magazine and is a strategic advisor to the Automatic Transmission Rebuilders Association. Jim is the past president of the National Speakers Association and the recipient of that institution's highest honor, the Golden Gavel Award. He joins giants like Zig Ziglar and Earl Nightingale with that prestigious distinction. Jim has also been inducted into both the National Speakers and Sales and Marketing Hall of Fame. He has written 18 books and has presented over 3,000 professional speeches. At last check, Jim's TEDx talk, How to Believe in Yourself, has garnered over 800,000 views and climbing. Jim and I have a very casual conversation laced with great stories that relate to his message of personal development and relationship selling. 100% of this interview is applicable to every aftermarket person and any situation that you may be trying to improve. Jim wrote the original book on relationship selling back in the 80s and continues to update it with the most recent update in 2015. He's written 18 books with his newest released in August 2016, The Self-Motivation Handbook. The show notes will provide you plenty of support material and additional bio information and the link to Jim's TEDx talk. This is another interview you will want to double up on because you'll pick up new takeaways with every listen. Now, among the powerful messages is when Jim turned his life around by hearing a radio program from Earl Nightingale. You'll learn why your job is not just about fixing cars, and Jim says customer relationships are an asset. And it gets better. Jim tells a great story on how he cut his first CD of songs this past June while on a speaking tour of China. Yeah, he's a guitar player. It's a great story, and you may just hear some guitar licks in the episode. Now settle back with your mind open and enjoy Jim Cathcart. It's nice to be with Jim Cathcart, the president of the Cathcart Institute. Hey, Jim, welcome to Remarkable Results Radio Podcast.
Hey, Carm. I'm eager to produce some remarkable results today.
Oh, man, I am. Well, let me see. I have to pinch myself to think that I've got you on the radio here with me on the podcast. And, you know, to think that you're a contributing author to Gears magazine and a strategic advisor to the Automatic Transmission Rebuilders Association, and a shout-out to Roger Bland, who hooked us up. And Roger's been on the podcast before. An incredible episode. I think he must be a good student of yours.
I think he is who I want to be when I die and grow up, because he's got the most beautiful voice and the greatest memory. He can get up on a stage and just recite things that he knows without referring to notes. The guy's amazing.
Yeah, I know. I was so impressed with the interview that I did. And I love your story. Best-selling author, a world-renowned speaker, and president of course, your Cathcart Institute. I'd have to say, because of your relationship with ATRA and Gears, you've got some automotive aftermarket tendencies.
I do. Yeah, I smell petroleum.
You know, to think that I'm talking to a guy who's been inducted into the National Speakers and Sales and Marketing Hall of Fame, one of the highest honors, the National Speakers Association Golden Gavel Award, with the likes of Zig Ziglar and Art Linkletter.
And Earl Nightingale, my mentor.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, you so nicely talk about that in your TED Talk video.
Uh-huh. Boy, that one's done well.
Yeah, How to Believe in Yourself.
Yeah. 830,000 views in 3 years. So it's averaging about 300,000 views a year with no promotion.
I found out about the 168th ranked TEDx that's ever been produced.
Out of 70,000 of them. Yeah, that's a great honor. That it really is.
Wow. Well, okay. So, what are we going to talk about? Well, we're going to talk about a lot of great things.
Cars, guitars, motorcycles.
Absolutely. We're going to talk about cars. We're going to talk about the fact that, you know, we repair people's problems. What matters most to the customer, Jim?
What matters most to the customer is certainly not the car. You know, they say, hey, I got a problem with my car. I need help with my car. Actually, what they're saying to you is either not able to get where I want to go in the style that I'd like to go there, or I can't get my kids to soccer on time, or I'm going to be late on this trip if I don't get this thing repaired, or I'm afraid I'm going to get stranded out in the middle of nowhere and not be able to complete my journey. They're really not as concerned about the car as they and you often think they are.
Yeah, it's a piece. It's actually such an integrated part of our life. It's a necessity.
Well, it's like me and my guitars. You know, I play guitar and sing professionally. And something that matters to me is the care and feeding of each of those guitars. I really want to take care of my guitars. Why? Well, symbolically, they mean something to me, just like my car, my little Thunderbird. Which has a license plate that says Cool Bird.
Okay.
Like my little car, you know, I'm proud of that car, but I could replace the car. I could replace the guitar. The guitars are meaningful, but the main thing about them that makes them meaningful is the way they sound when I play them, the familiarity of the feel of that particular instrument when I'm playing it. You know, it's just like my car is, it's ideal for my needs and my wants, and I'm proud of it. But it's not the car I'm really concerned about.
So the service writer who's dealing with a customer who comes in, who's got a problem, an issue, a noise, something going on, needs to best understand that Johnny's soccer game win last night was because the soccer mom's car got them there and back home.
That's right. Absolutely. And I wrote an article for Gears about a year or so ago called Fix the Customer First. And isn't that the truth? You know, when someone comes in and they need service of any type, the first thing we want to find out is what's their problem. Let me give you an analogy to this.
Okay.
I use Apple Computer. Love Apples. Years ago, I had left Apple and gone to Windows computers. And so I studied all the Windows programs, became skilled at that. But my computer kept breaking down where I had to do a restart, constant restarts in order to fix little problems in it. And whenever I would take my computer in to get it repaired, they'd repair it. But then again, it wasn't the same as when I went back to Apple. Here's how. I called my friend Terry Brock, who's a technology expert. And I said, I'm thinking about switching completely from Windows back to Apple. What do you think? He said, let me tell you one thing, and that'll probably make up your mind. When you take your computer, your Windows computer in to get it repaired, they will ask you what it's doing, and then they'll repair the computer. When you take your Apple in to be repaired, they'll set the computer off to the side, look you in the eyes, and say, what are you trying to accomplish? They fix the customer first.
Wait a minute. You just gave me a wild idea. When you go into an Apple store, there's the Genius Bar there.
Absolutely.
And so why can't we take that? You know, there's great lessons. Apple's taught us an awful lot about stuff as far as customer service. Maybe we need to stop right now and adopt that every service manager needs to think that they're in that Genius Bar mode.
That's absolutely. And if they don't feel comfortable with the title genius, you know, I'd say get over it, because you are, from the customer's point of view, you're the car genius. You're the one who knows automobiles, mechanics, you know, functions, things like that, systems. And they're not in most cases. So just get comfortable with the fact that you are an automotive expert in your niche. And when they come in the door to you, you know more on your subject than they do. They know more on many subjects than you do. But when it comes to cars and your specialty, you're the genius. Okay, how should you behave? Well, not like, let me show you what I know. No, don't get full of yourself. Focus on them and say, what's it doing? And what? Tell me how you use this car. Is this mostly your commuter car? Is this your business car? Is this the one you go cruising with your friends to show off? You know, what do you take it to car shows? What's this car to you, other than just basic transportation?
You know, you're a relationship selling guru.
Well, I did write the first book ever by that title.
Yes. And how can you give me an example of that relationship selling piece to a service advisor?
Yeah. You bet. In a relationship selling environment, meaning a business where they realize that a connection between people is potentially an asset, they treat you differently. I went into a motorcycle dealership years ago in San Diego. I wanted to buy some summer riding gloves, you know, the perforated kind. And so I went in, I walked up to Scott, the guy that I usually dealt with at that dealership, and I bought many motorcycles there and lots of accessories, of course. And I said, hey, Scott, I need to buy this pair of gloves. He said, okay, that's $20. It was a cheap pair of gloves. So they were in a plastic package, and I took them home. And that evening, I took them out of the package and I put them on, and they didn't fit quite right. They were the right size, but they just didn't feel comfortable. You know, I knew on a long ride that would get it annoying. So the next day, I went back and I said, hey, Scott, I want to exchange these gloves. There's a pair over here on the rack that are not packaged that fit me perfectly, and they're $1 less than this $22 pair that I bought yesterday. So keep the dollar. Let's just trade gloves. He said, got your receipt? I said, no, not with me. He said, well, you know, I can't exchange the gloves without a receipt. And I said, why not? He said, well, without a receipt, you could have stolen them. I said, Scott, it's me. He said, yeah, but I mean, a person could. I said, wait. Let's don't shove this off to general policies that apply to all people. I'm standing right here in front of you. And you called me by name when I came in the door. Hi, Jim.
Yeah.
So it's real clear there's something here, right? So just trade the gloves. And he said, well, he was hesitating. I said, you don't have the authority to make an exception, do you? He said, no. I said, who does? He said, my boss. I said, go get your boss. So he gets his boss, and his boss comes out. Talk about an unenlightened guy.
Uh-oh.
He walks up and says, so what's the problem here? Which means, basically, I don't like you. Go away and leave us alone. He's saying that to a customer. So what's the problem here? I said, I'm Jim Cathcart. I've bought my last motorcycle and several before that here. And I buy all my parts and accessories here. I come here for service. And I want to exchange these gloves, and there's a dollar difference.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you got a receipt? And I said, we've been there. And he said, look, Jim, put yourself in my position. I said, okay, how? He said, could you in good conscience resell a pair of used, like he was spitting the word used out, used gloves as if they were new? I said, no. I said, but these aren't used. They just spent the night at my place. I said, so put yourself in my position. He said, how's that? I said, my last bike cost $14,000 here. One before that was $11,600. The one before that was $10,000. The one before that was about $15,000. I'm worth well over $45,000 or $50,000 to you so far. And every year I spend somewhere around $2,500 in parts, accessories, and service here. is it really, really sensible to you to risk all of that future business over a dollar you're going to gain in a glove exchange? And he looked at me and he paused. Clearly, I pierced the bubble, right? And I got through to him. And he said, "You want a bag for those, or do you just want to wear them home?"
Oh, boy.
I said, "I'll wear them home. Thank you."
The power of the message.
The difference between a relationship orientation and a thing or a money orientation.
Well, you must work hard with corporations to get this message to the frontline people that customers are assets.
And it takes a lot of tinkering, because you've got to change the leadership mindset so that things they measure and reward and or punish,
right,
are things that reinforce the right attitude. You know, all the policies, the training systems, the procedures, the forms and formats, the checklists, all those things grow out of a way of thinking. And if that way of thinking doesn't change, then like in the automotive industry and sales, where they implemented all these customer satisfaction index things, well, the salespeople, because their boss in many cases didn't change his mentality or hers, they just figured out how to game the customer service index system like they had the previous system.
Mm-hmm.
And customers still felt slimy.
Right, right. We've been talking an awful lot on the podcast with entrepreneurs in this industry about purpose and culture a lot. And it seems like the 1%ers, the 5%ers in our industry, mm-hmm, are really jumping heavy into culture and purpose.
You bet.
And that's what you're really talking about. It really starts at the top, but it's a total engagement of the company. Customers are assets. How powerful. I'm talking with Anthony Frohwein, a technical product specialist with Federal Mogul Motor Parts. Anthony, when you're in a shop, are you talking tech as well as product?
Whenever I do a physical training, there is product incorporated part of the whole training overall, but it's to maximize the time, whether it's diagnostics, whether it's inspection, whether it's installation. So that way they understand that, hey, by skipping that extra 20 seconds by putting on this set of brake pads and not replacing the hardware, hey, this might be the reason why that I'm getting comebacks. And usually, being a ex-shop owner, I understand that the first time you get paid, the second time's free.
And so are the techs really starving for this information?
Oh, absolutely. A lot of times you have, we live in an industry where I like to say they cut the roast in half and they don't understand why, but they do it just because they've always been doing it type of an industry. So, you know, to break it through that, they've been doing something for 30 years and they see as they haven't been doing anything wrong, but it starts to open up their eyes to, hey, you know what? It wasn't necessarily wrong, but there is a better way.
So you're really talking to me about an aha moment.
Exactly.
And tell me, when you see that happening more and more from technicians that you're out with, how does it make you feel?
Oh, it's awesome. I mean, you really feel like you're giving back to the community overall. But ultimately, the way I tell them, you know, I look at every single vehicle that I worked on prior to, or I had my customer, just like I'd put my family in that vehicle. I look at it as I'm keeping everybody else that much safer because the job's getting done correctly.
Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Gurus is your go-to source for the vehicle training, technology, and answers you need to keep your next job on track. On site, online, or on demand, the gurus are here to help keep your business and your career on the road to success. Visit fmgarageguru.com. Talk about the individual. Does everyone you work with and deal with as customers, suppliers, or vendors have an opinion about you as an individual?
You have a reputation whether you know it or not. Even if you're unknown to somebody and they walk up to you from off the street, first time you've ever laid eyes on each other, you have the beginnings of a reputation. Your reputation is influenced by where you are, what you seem to be doing or able to do, and how you're going about it. So they look at your dealership, and if it's a trashy looking place, they expect you to be a trashy kind of a guy.
Yeah.
And if they see a bunch of litter in the parking lot, they assume there's going to be inaccuracy in the record keeping. And the cars are probably going to get a lot of grease smudges and drips and things like that on them while they're being serviced.
Not where I want to take my car.
Nah, me either. And if all those stickers on the front door, you know, that show how many credit cards and how many suppliers you have and all that stuff, if all those things look ugly and are messy, then they're going to assume some of your people are going to be that way once their car is inside in your care. So they're going to be saying things. Well, hey, will you put covers on the floor mats, and will you put something on the seats? I mean, last time I went, you know, and there was this guy who, you know, and all these things they're worried about. Well, for heaven's sakes, take their tension level down. Get out a little razor blade and scrape those ugly old stickers off of the door and clean it up. Make sure the waiting room or entry room, you know, the office, looks at least like a pleasant place to be. And even if you're up to your elbows in grease, get something to cover your hands and elbows when you go greet the customer, right? There's tension and trust always at play in a relationship. And when someone walks up to us, their tension level is high until they see something that tells them not to worry so much, and then trust starts to build. But you can't build trust independent of reducing tension. The tension is relationship tension. They're worried about you or your dealership or your shop. They're worried about how their car is going to come out of there. They're worried about whether they're going to get ripped off for five times the cost of what they could have fixed it for. They're worried about whether you're using cheap replacement parts instead of, you know, original equipment quality parts, that kind of thing. And they're worried about whether you are listening.
Oh, whoa. There it is, right there.
Listening is wanting to hear.
Where did I recently read something on you about listening? And I wish I could remember the quote. Oh, my God.
If only you'd been listening.
If only I had written it down. When you get as old as me, you got to write things down.
I hear you.
Well, you're a good friend of Dr. Tony Alessandra.
Yep. We're executor of each other's will.
Oh, wow. How powerful is that? And, you know, there are so many people talking about that platinum rule all the time.
Well, let's remind the listeners what the platinum rule is. Do unto others the way they want to be done unto.
Right. And when you think about, you know, you just brought up these great thoughts in my head about if I went to the dentist and I saw what you just described in a bad dentist's kind of way, this may not be the place I want to put anybody to put their fingers in my mouth, right?
Yeah, in that case, you'd walk in, the dentist say, what's your problem? Say, oh, I'm not about to open my mouth in front of you.
Well, if you could see Jim, you know, he's just so damn animated. I just wish we were recording the video. This is just unbelievable. So I have a reputation, how I talk to people. Does it affect me and my supplier in a big way?
Absolutely. So that's the thing. You're surrounded by a network of relationships, whether you realize they're relationships or not. You've got the guy that stops by every week or two with tools and service for your existing tools. You know, you've got the people that bring the supplies that you use, the petroleum supplies, the other things, the belts, the, you know, whatever it is you're into. You've got all these people that you're dealing with, that your shop is dealing with from day to day, week to week, month to month. And those people either look forward to coming to your shop, look forward to dealing with you, or they dread it, right? Yep. Maybe they're neutral at some times, but usually there's either a positive or a negative bent toward that show up. And I've done that. You know, I've driven a delivery truck. I've gone around and serviced dealers. I was a field rep for GMAC years ago, and I had to repossess log trucks in the Ozark Mountains when I was 22 years old.
Wait a minute. You up against a logger?
Yeah. Yeah. And I learned real fast that I needed to change the plan, right? Because I was not going to intimidate any of these guys into paying their bills. And if I tried it, I was probably going to die. As a matter of fact, the guy who took over my territory when I left, he came straight out of the Marines into bill collecting. There should have been a gap where he could readjust.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't readjust his combat mindset.
Okay.
Went out on the job as the enforcer.
Oh.
And about a week or maybe a month into the job, he called in a guy named Monroe, who I'd been calling on for a long time and getting payments. Monroe was always late, but he always paid. Well, Pete, his name was Pete Smith, he went out and decided he's going to clean up the account. So he shows up on Munro's porch at night. It's like 7 o'clock at night in the dark. He bangs on the door. Munro answers the door. He says something that comes across like this. All right, Smith's a name, credits the game. I want your money, your life, your car, or your wife. You make the call. That's not what he said, but that's how it came across.
I got it.
Munro accepted the challenge, stepped onto the porch, and beat Pete Smith to a bloody pulp, put him in the hospital for 2 weeks. And I looked at that, and I thought, wow. Now, here's a guy. He and I had the same education, same training. We were about the same in many respects, except for mindset. And the guy who had been giving me payments month after month chose instead to beat him to a pulp and disappear into the sunset with the truck. Wow. I mean, talk about a difference in the way we approach the job. So I had learned early on that if I tried to be the strong guy, the alpha male, the big dog, then I was going to end up with more physical and emotional resistance than I had going in.
You know, this reminds me of the story you just told about the gloves. Now, can I assume it's a Harley?
No. As a matter of fact, my first bike was a Harley scooter back in the 1960s, a topper. And then BMW, Kawasaki, Suzuki, Honda, Triumph, Yamaha, etc.
But still, the story goes back to you could have been a very stubborn alpha male customer. But you really attempted in an eloquent way to try to get your point made. And at the same time, Jim, and this is my big takeaway. You actually helped this individual, I think, realize a lot more about being a much better leader because he finally came to a conclusion and you were the teacher at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, the teacher arrived.
Yeah. You know, in that same dealership, there was a salesman who was fairly new. And I overheard him one day. I was in there kicking tires and trying out new bikes. And I heard him. He knew me because I had done some training for his company. And he hadn't been in the training. But anyway, he knew me. And so he's griping to this other salesman. He says, I spent 30 minutes with that guy. I showed him 6 different bikes. And then he didn't buy. He owes me. I said, excuse me. He said, what? I said, he doesn't owe you squat. He said, what do you mean? I said, owe you? I said, what do you think his job is? To buy a bike? Who's going to pay him to go buy a bike? His job's not to buy a bike. He's just a buyer. He just shops, right? Your job is to sell the bike.
Right.
If you can't convince him it's a good idea to do business with you, it's on you, dude, not him. So you're the problem. He doesn't owe you anything.
Ah, selling starts when the buyer says no, right?
Well, selling starts when the buyer says, I like this guy. He's interested in me.
Bingo.
You know? Yeah, actually, combat starts when the buyer says no. Negotiation starts, you know, when the buyer says no. When the buyer says no, you've already taken it in the wrong direction.
That's true.
So it's time to go back, because I got a no from Scott at the counter. I got a no from Scott's boss. And then I said, okay, let's change the energy here and approach it from a very different perspective. I'm going to show this guy how much I'm worth to him.
Powerful stuff, powerful stuff. So I'm loving these, and I think there's some great lessons for the aftermarket here. So many great lessons. Jim, how you think about your customer, how will it affect how well they cooperate with you?
Let's take, for example, a person who thinks customers are an annoyance, that his or her job is just fixing cars. Okay.
Yep.
Customers are a necessary problem that you have to contend with in order to fix cars.
Yep.
Right. If that's your attitude, how many out of, let's say, 10 customers are going to be able to tell that that's your attitude? I'm guessing 10.
Right.
Every single one of them will feel that emotional distance whenever they're dealing with you, because you're going to be talking about the car. They're going to be talking about why the car matters in their life. or they're going to be talking about the fear that they have about a particular aspect of the car, or the how concerned they are over, you know, they'd spent their entire weekend polishing and detailing the car, and now here's this big blemish that came up, and they got to find a way to make it right without spending a fortune. And you're just saying, you know, if you hadn't put that stuff on there, it wouldn't be clouded up like that. So just do that better, that, and don't ever do that again. You know, what you're doing is scolding. You're assuming the role of a authoritative parent who doesn't like his kid. And naturally, they're not going to want to deal with you ever again. Yeah, but I can do things that they can't do. Yeah, but so can 100,000 other people in the world, right? We're not nearly as unique and special as we think we are when it comes to the general category of what we do for people. So we need to get it that if we want all their business instead of just one tiny little one-time transaction, then we need to show them that we care about their concerns, and then we'll focus on the things that we can fix.
How much of this do you see out there still?
It's abundant. What's astounding to me, I've been doing this 40 years, is that after all the people like me who have done training and you know, written books, and the people like Carl Sewell who have developed dealerships that have become icons for customer service and that sort of thing, after all the big programs at the national level, there is still a new crop of cynics that graduates every single year and enters our world.
I find it, well, I guess because you wrote a book on self-motivation and it was released in August, that there is still so much work that has to be done.
Yeah.
And I'm astounded that we have these issues and problems each and every day. As you say, they're born into it. We're not teaching, we're not grooming, we're not coaching, we're not sharing, we're not communicating. So
We're just not doing it enough.
Well, great lesson and great wise words. Tell me about this book that you wrote, and why is it a different self-motivation book than any others that have been written?
This one is the accumulation of my 40 years in this business as a business motivator and trainer. When I was young and overweight and out of shape and smoking two packs a day and thinking small, I never expected I'd have much of a meaningful life. And then I heard Earl Nightingale on the radio one day, 1972, with a little inspiring message. And what he said that day turned my thinking around, which caused me to turn my life around. And what he said in a program just like yours was, if you'll spend 1 hour extra each day focused on learning more about your chosen field, you can be a national expert in that field in 5 years or less. Wow. 5 years or less?
Man.
Without an extra college degree, without special brain power, without knowing all the right people? And I thought, that's actually doable. I could do this. And so I started spending an extra hour a day. At first, I was spending 2 hours and entire weekends and things like that. But after a while, it became just like a regular dedicated extra hour beyond my work each day, where I was learning something new about the field of motivation and personal development, because I wanted to be successful in that field. I wanted to go into psychology as it's applied to business and life, you know, success psychology, I guess you'd call
it.
That led me over a period of time to get enough knowledge in that field that people started seeking my advice. And then I started leading discussions and doing training sessions. And then I got hired to train people using other people's programs, you know, a licensee. And then I went out on my own and met Dr. Tony Alessandro, who we referred to earlier. He was a college professor in San Diego, and I moved to San Diego. And we formed Cathcart Alessandro and Associates, and started writing books and giving speeches and recording video programs. And today I've got 18 published books with most of the major publishers in New York and around the world. I've got other publishers. I've done more than 3,000 professional speeches. As I mentioned earlier, the original author of relationship selling. Mm-hmm. So if anybody uses that term, where it started was with me back in the 1980s.
So wait a minute, Jim. Jim, who stole it? Who changed it from relationship to consult to?
Tony.
Okay.
Yeah, Tony Alessandro. He wrote a book called Consultative Selling with Rick Barrera.
All right.
Yeah. The others have used it, you know, but it's now a generic category that people don't necessarily connect with me. They just think about consultative selling, customer oriented selling, service oriented selling, relationship selling. You know, there's so many different ways that they say it,
mm-hmm.
but it all boils down to recognizing that a relationship is an asset and structuring your business so that you build more of those assets, because it could also be a liability.
I know I got to get things done. We all have goals, aspirations. I live in the to-do list. I've got a great business plan for the podcast. How will your self-motivation handbook help me?
Well, it's a practical handbook as opposed to a treatise on the subject of motivation. You asked how it's different.
Yeah.
The way it's different is that it has 336 specific one-minute-to-read ideas in it on how to motivate yourself and make your life better. And the book is designed to be written in and consumed rather than just read and then set aside. And it's designed also, and I spent a lot of time designing it for this, to where you can take the 306 pages of this book and just fan it open like a deck of cards and page. And on that page, you will find an idea that you can read in 1 minute, and it'll draw you further into the book for the other ideas.
I think we love books like that. It's not like I've got to start from beginning to end to get the essence of the book. You're saying flip to a page
any page.
And do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you own a shop, you can hand the book to one of your coworkers and say, turn that to any page. And they say, which page? Any page. And they turn it to page, I don't know, 106. And you say, okay, what's on that page? And they read you the headline that's on that page. So, okay, let's talk about that as it relates to you and me. Because everything in that book is focused on some kind of a general life issue that all of us deal with day to day, year to year. So it might be about how you influence other people, or what are the key essentials if you want to build pride in your work? What does it mean truly to be a professional? How should you deal with really annoying and obnoxious people? What do you do when all your hopes have been dashed and you've got to start fresh? What if you were getting ready for the marathon today and you tore a ligament in your leg? You know, how are you going to handle things like that?
Yeah, yeah. You know, I love it in the concept of the Book of the Month Club almost, or if not, it's the page of the week or something. I can see how that could become
36 ideas. You can take weekends off and you still got a day, you know, one for every day of the year.
What a great idea. Well, I guess I'm going to encourage everyone to go out and get that. Now it's paperback, Kindle.
The Self-Motivation Handbook. It's on Amazon. So just go to Amazon and enter the name Jim Cathcart or The Self-Motivation Handbook, or just write theselfmotivationhandbook.com and it'll take you directly to a page that tells you about the book.
Thanks. I appreciate that. The next best book that if you were going to recommend to our listeners of yours that they should read?
Relationship Selling.
Bingo.
Yeah. It's How to Get and Keep Customers. It's the top the 8 skill sets. I call them competencies, the 8 competencies of top sales producers. And that book I wrote originally in 1986. I rewrote it in 2002, 2007, 2009, and so forth. Latest edition was revised in 2015. So it's definitely up to date.
It's fresh. Okay.
And it does not talk about, and this, a lot of people say, what? It does not talk about using social media to sell. And people say, well, why don't you put a section in there on that? Because there are millions of books on that. And what I want to sell is the reason you should want to use social media, the thinking you should apply when using social media. So whether you're selling face-to-face, whether you're selling at a swap meet or a car show, or whether you're standing on a street corner with a sign twirling it around while you listen to Bon Jovi in a headset, you know, it doesn't make any difference. The mindset that you're approaching this from has everything to do with it. You know, people don't come to a shop because they see a sign. They come to a shop because they see a sign held by a guy who's smiling.
How powerful. Wow. All right. That guitar that's sitting in the background, you mentioned it.
Hanging gently and tenderly in the background.
And so you told me in our pre-call that you had recorded your first CD while on a tour of China?
Yeah, I was speaking in Taiwan and China, multiple cities, this was in June, speaking to 1,000 people at a time for 6 hours a day, if you can imagine that, on the subject of relationship selling. They took my book, Relationship Selling, and translated it into Mandarin.
Oh, wow.
And published it with the English and Mandarin side by side. So it ended up becoming a two-volume book that looks like two phone books because it's 8.5 by 11 size, like stationery. And we sold 1,200 of those books on the first week I was over there. And anyway, at the end of the day, they always had my guitar there, and I would sit and play my guitar in every spare minute that I had. And one day my client said, "You are unstoppable on guitar. Let's cut a record." And I said, "Yeah, good idea." He said, 3 o'clock today. I said, "What?" He said, "Yeah, 3 o'clock today. Get in the car." So we drove across town, which was more than an hour, went to the studio where a group called Linkin Park had recently cut an album. Mm-hmm. And this was in Taipei, Taiwan. And I sat down in the studio with the nice guitar that they had provided me. And they all left the studio and went into the control room. And they said, "Okay, go." Well, I didn't even have a song list. So this was not a planned album. This was spontaneous from the get-go. And so I sat there and I thought, okay, what can I do that would be useful to record? And I decided I would do a living room concert as if you and I and half a dozen others were sitting around the living room at a fire, you know, beside a fireplace, or in the living room by a fireplace. And I just talked and then played songs. And I did 19 songs. And the next day they had it produced with a full color photo on the cover and a song list on the back and in a, you know, what they call a jewel case. Oh my gosh. So it's called Fireside Songs and it's now available on my music website, which is guitarmusiclive.com. Guitarmusiclive.com.
In a New York minute. Wow.
I could save time in a bottle. The first thing that I'd like to do is save every day till eternity passes away, just to spend them with you.
Wow. Wow. Jim Croce. Wow, how cool is that?
Jim Croce, my man.
How cool is that? Well, he left us a little too soon, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Yes, he did. Well, okay. What else do we need to know about Jim Cathcart?
Nothing. But what else can we provide that might be helpful for somebody else?
Yeah. What else? What else can we do to make the people that listen to this show want to get out and change their life?
Well, first thing is to remind them that they can. That every one of us can literally change the direction of our life right now. You can say, "No, you don't get it. You don't have the problems I have. You know, your family is behind you. Your coworkers support you. Other people believe in you. You don't have the problems I have. You're not broke like I am. You're not stupid like people tell me I am. You didn't get all upset because such and such happened this morning. You just don't get it, Jim. You know, you're all this, you know, successful and top of your game and all these big deal books and these speeches. Excuse me. I started out 52 pounds overweight, out of shape, basically a loser. No college degree, no money in the bank, no connections in the community. My dad was a good man. He was a telephone repairman. My mother was a housewife. My grandfather was an invalid who couldn't speak or move for the last 7 years of his life. He was in our front bedroom, and mom and my grandmother helped take care of him. I didn't grow up with any advantages other than a loving family. And I had no expectation my life would ever be significant. I thought I'd live to the statistic average for my gene pool and then die, and that nobody would particularly remember I was around. My goal was to grow up to be a good person and to have a decent life. And then I heard on the radio that inspiring message from Earl Nightingale, and I realized maybe I could really do something that matters in the world and leave a legacy. And since that time, 40 years as a professional speaker, and I've won every award in the field of professional speaking.
So it starts, and so congratulations to you, but it starts by setting goals.
Well, it starts by believing that it's possible to be better.
Okay.
You know, and that's really fundamental. But if someone says, no, look, that's just the way I am. No, it's not. That's the way you've chosen to remain. It's not just the way you are. It might be the tendency you have or your starting point. But every day is just your new starting point.
When I think about how to move your own self into this personal development, what you've lived your whole life, yes, you've got to believe, you got to set goals. How important is it to read motivational books?
You're going to be ingesting some kind of information anyway. So if you watch soap operas during the day, then you will believe everybody cheats on everybody else. Everybody's trying to murder someone or take their money, you know, that people can't be trusted and life sucks and then you die. If what you listen to during the day is just politics, then everything's going to get you angry and upset. And you're always going to be rooting for your underdog candidate or saying, man, if only people would see things the way I do. If you only watch comedies and never tune into the news,
right,
then you're going to blissfully go along not having a clue what's going on in the world. So we need a balance of information, but we ought to be intentional about the flavor that we're eating. You know, if everything you eat is chili powder, you're really going to have no clue what it's like to have a wonderful meal.
Yeah,
there are some wonderful meals that have chili powder, but not all of them. And there are some ways of looking at things that don't agree with yours that are even better than yours. So I'm constantly seeking better input every day. And that's where motivational books and programs like this come in.
Well, look, at you've just hit me over the head in what you just said. And I want to bring some value to associations and to memberships. The people that are on the show talk so much about the value of networking and the value of belonging. Mm-hmm. And we talk about when you're in a 20 group and you're working with people from around the country and you're going to them as resources. What give us an idea from your perspective what the value of networking is to strong personal development?
We are a reflection of the people that we spend the most time with, even when we don't think we are. I've forgotten who said it, but he said, if you tell me the five people you spend the most time with, I will absolutely guarantee you that you are, to a large extent, the common denominator of those people, right?
Yeah.
You are showing a little bit of those people in you all the time. So if you hang out with cynical, skeptical, pessimistic people, it will show up in you no matter how much you resist it. My sister used to hang out with a friend who was that way, just carried a cloud of sadness and skepticism everywhere. And I said to my sister once, please don't invite her over in the future. And she said, well, she's my best friend. I said, yeah, she's not mine. She's yours. I said, and every time she comes over here, she's got something that she's complaining about or someone she's criticizing. She's got a villain of the week or the month or, you know, someone to hate today. And I don't need that in my life. I can find it if I need it, you know, but I don't need it. And she said, well, she's my friend. If you don't, you know, not good enough for me. And I said, if that's how you choose to frame this, fine. I'll see you on Thanksgiving. But you're welcome here anytime, just not with the baggage. Don't bring the sad person. And so I started years ago intentionally choosing who I listen to, hang out with, collaborate with, turn to for advice, et cetera. And I found my answers at first in the field of personal development at the USJCs, the Junior Chamber of Commerce, because the whole organization back in the 1970s was focused around leadership training and personal development. I joined a local chapter. It went to 400 JCs meetings after working on weekends in the first 2 years I belonged. 400. Didn't make any money, spent money going to that, and didn't have much. I was making maybe $500 a month at the time. I ended up being so active in the JCs that I got promoted to state chairman of leadership training, et cetera, and ended up on the national headquarters staff as a full-time employee writing their training manuals for leadership training for 356,000 members. Then I joined the newly formed in the 1970s National Speakers Association. That was my industry association. People that did what I did for a living, professional speakers, authors, you know, personal development people. Mm-hmm. I moved through the ranks and ultimately became the national president of that organization. I've had the privilege of receiving all the awards that they provide over the many years that I've been involved. And that's still my professional family.
Yeah.
Well, with ATRA, for whom I'm a strategic advisor, that's a portion of my automotive-related professional family.
Yeah.
You know, I look at associations as an intentionally chosen professional family, and it has ugly cousins and nasty uncles and rich uncles and best buddies and closest siblings and everything else in it, just like a regular family does. Some of them are to be avoided. Most of them are to be sought out and to intentionally spend time with them.
Powerful, powerful. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you being on. Now, thank you from the bottom of my heart. Would you do me a favor as we end? What a fitting end, by the way, with your association analogy. Take us out.
I'll do it, and I'll play my motorcycle song.
All right.
Riding Free. Whoops, I've got the wrong key for that. Hang on just a second. I'm pressing. Okay.
Nothing like live radio. Here we go. Here
yeah. Is. I'm riding free, got the highway at my feet. No place to be and no schedules to meet. There's not a thing in this world to tear me down. The buses pass me by their destination on pace. No names on me, man, I'm not going just one place. I go where I want to be, in any town. Nothing but my mood to guide me. I follow the road I like best. One week I may go to the next I'm headed southwest. Two wheels below me, an open road ahead. Don't need much money cause I'm carrying my bed. I'll work one day for my bread and travel home.
Wow. Is it on the CD?
It is on the CD.
It's a great tune.
Thank you. The punchline of the song, which is in the last verse, is my goal's the ride, not the place. I'm riding free.
Yeah. Well, just great words, by the way. Congrats to writing a great song. And thanks for being on.
You bet. It's a treat. Thanks, Carm.
Thank you, man. Hey, aftermarket professionals. Thanks so much for listening. Find additional show notes on Jim Cathcart, his bio, and links to his website and the TEDx talk on my website. Go to remarkableresults.biz/E166. I'm certain you were inspired and learned enough to motivate you to your own personal improvement. There was something in this episode with Jim Cathcart for everyone. Now don't hesitate to listen again. With each episode out on the web, on demand, and evergreen, you can listen when the time is right. I do appreciate your engagement with the podcast and would ask that you help spread the word. Uniting our industry for continual improvements is a goal, and I'm grateful and thankful for your support. Now pay this episode forward to a friend. Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from another inspiring aftermarket professional. Until next time.